through the night that our flag was still there.
Oh, come on, and the three of you guys, you pull one thing, you're out of this game. I run a clean game here. I have any trouble, I'll suspend. I'm listening to a fucking song!
The 70s versus the 80s podcast. This is the podcast that asks, just because Blockbuster videos are closed everywhere, are you still incurring fees on your weekend and birdie steak that you never returned? I mean,
oh man, when I moved into this house, I found a Blockbuster video of that movie Backdraft, and I think I took that out about 1995 or 1996. So I'm waiting for them to come get my car to satisfy those late charges.
That's what when you get these, when you keep those movies forever, how come it's always a bad movie? It's never like
Godfather or Jaws. That's true, though.
And it's always like Brewster's Millions or something you never want to watch again.
or the live action Richie Rich.
Yeah. Yep. So, so we got a big podcast planned today. We're going to talk some Slapshot. And first, we're going to talk. You heard some Celebrate, so we're gonna talk some Cool in the Gang. It sounds like Jim just spring that song on me, but we wanted to thank our listeners. We're getting just some great feedback from our listeners, and one in particular, John Jelowinski. I hope I'm saying that right, John. I'm sure people have messed up your last name before, though. But he's really said some great things about us, and he's like a big fan of that show Emergency. Do you remember that show?
I do. That's when they had that three-tone alarm that they would play. And then everybody would jump. Yeah, remember that?
That's totally right.
Yeah. I've got John Jelinevsky. That is a Polish name, if I've ever heard one. John Jelinevsky. Anyway, thanks a lot, John. Just like Mike said, thanks for tuning into the show and giving us a good rating.
Yeah, and one thing I can say good about that show Emergency was it Johnny Gage and I can't remember the other guy. They kind of looked like the one Adam 12 guys, except they had 70s haircut and the Adam 12 guys had 60s haircuts.
That's right.
But they look kind of this. But what I liked about those shows is they were just their moral compasses were set due north. I mean, you just saw them at work. They were just all about, I think they always had their uniform on. They were always at work. They were always doing good. And I don't know, it was like those Stephen Bosco, when he came out with like those Hill Street Blues and stuff, and everyone's like, oh, they're so gritty. And it's true, they were gritty, but now every show is like that. Every show, one of the guys is going through a divorce. The other guy's an alcoholic. The woman on the show is always having an affair with one of her coworkers. And it's like, I kind of miss those old shows where they were just straight as an arrow. And they were all, you know what I mean? Their moral compasses were set due north. And I don't know, I guess it's better writing now. But I mean, I just kind of miss those characters that were just so good, like straight arrows. But you started us off with some Cool in the Gang. And that song Celebrate, when I think of that song, usually when a song comes out, you hear it that summer or it's the song of that year. But Celebrate went on for like 3 years where it was like the song of for like 3 years in a row. That song just went forever and ever on the radio.
Yeah, and I got sick of it because I went to Northview Elementary, and our gym teacher played that song every day for 3 years while we, you know, did calisthenics before, you know, before our gym class. We had to warm up, and that was the song she played every day.
Yeah, that song really went for, had the lasting power like no other song I can remember. And what do you know about Kool and the Gang?
Well, first of all, a lot of people don't know this, but this song was on their 12th studio album. Kool and the Gang had put out 12 or 11 prior to this. This was their 12th studio album, and it came out in October of 1980. It was number one for a while on both the R&B and the Billboard Pop 100 charts. So it was like a huge chart-topping song, and it still gets a lot of play years later because it just kind of puts people in a good mood.
Yeah, and I remember it would always get played like when a team won the Super Bowl or World Series, they would play it like as a video montage and stuff.
Yep, yep. And We Built This City song by Starship, that was a big one too for, you know, sporting events.
Yeah, that song often it makes a lot of lists for the worst song, worst rock song ever.
Yeah. It was what they played incessantly right after the Twins won their World Series.
Oh, jeez. I'm glad I don't remember that.
All the time.
So, yeah, that was kind of the musical theme. We're kind of doing R&B music. And you got Celebrate by Kool and the Gang. Do they have any other, do you know any other songs that are like as big as, or that's obviously their biggest song, but did they have some other big hits?
Well, they had some other hits. Jungle Boogie.
Oh, yep, that's right. That was their first funk song.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And then Stepping Out.
Yeah, Jungle Boogie was on Pulp Fiction. Wasn't that the opening credits?
I don't remember. But it would have belonged there. Tarantino's got a really good sense of what music to play where.
Yep.
And I tell you what, as long as we're talking about it real quick, I give him like 100% of the credit for reviving John Travolta's career and even Harvey Keitel and Robert Forster, who unfortunately just passed away. He reinvigorated those guys' careers like huge.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and even, yeah, he was good at that. He's bringing everybody back.
And John Travolta is the coolest cigarette smoker on the history of movies or TV. The way he handles a cigarette and smokes it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just like Columbo was good with his cigar, John Travolta just smokes the shit out of his cigarettes, and it's awesome to watch.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And and speaking of that, of somebody that looks cool smoking a cigarette, on our Facebook page, I'm going to put a picture of Dave Parker looking really cool smoking a cigarette in the dugout of the Pittsburgh Pirates. And that's because, I don't know if you remember this, but in 1979, they won the World Series and they had their own theme song, We Are Family by Sister Sledge.
Yes. I thought that was Pointer Sisters, but either way, I remember it. And they have Dave Stargell back then, too?
Yep, he was Willie Papa, Stargell. Or what was he?
Yeah, Willie Stargell.
Yeah, was he Papa Jack? Was that his nickname?
Maybe a Big Tummy Jack or something. He was a big boy.
Yeah, so it was Sister Sledge, and I thought that was a cool name, but it turns out they are three sisters, and their last name's Sledge.
So. Oh, what a last name to be stuck with. Oh, man.
And what I remember about this song is I used to go clubbing downtown in Minneapolis back in the probably the 90s. Mm-hmm. And they used to, this one club, it was called Cowboy Jacks, they would do little skits, and they would start blasting We Are Family. Mm-hmm. And they would have these nuns come out and start singing We Are Family, All My Sisters and Me.
Oh, I get it.
You get it? And then at the end of the song, they would lift up, what are those called, habits or whatever? And they would be wearing nothing but G-strings underneath.
Oh, man. No, that just ruined my night.
It just ruined your night, huh?
Oh, man. I don't want to think about that. Funny though.
Well, how about, should we get tonight's big show? We're gonna have our friend Brian join us, and we're gonna talk some slap shots. So do you think we should go jump in and start talking some slap shots?
I think
right
we
now?
Should do that. Yeah, I think we should do that.
Hi, Jim Carr again. Dennis, I know that some in our audience don't know the finer points of hockey. Could you tell them, for example, what is icing?
Well, icing happen when the puck come down, bang, you know, before the other guys, mm-hmm. nobody there, you know. Mm-hmm. My arm go comes out, then the game stop, then start up.
Mm-hmm. I see. What is high sticking?
High sticking happen when the guy take the stick, you know, and he go like that. You know, you don't do that.
You don't do that?
Oh, no, never, never.
Why not?
Against the rules. You know, you're stupid when you do that. Just some English pig with no brain
Dennis,
at all, you know.
What is slashing?
Slashing is like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And there's a penalty for that?
Yeah. And for a trip also, you know.
Oh.
Like that. And mm-hmm. for hook, like this. And for spear, you know, like that. Mm-hmm. All bad.
Bad.
You do that, you go to the box, you know, 2 minutes by yourself and... You feel shame, you know.
Okay, so I'm here with Jim Borner, and we got special guest Brian Malika. I think he's got a special story about renting Slapshot for us today, if I'm correct.
Well, it's not that I rented it. So I was dating this girl back in the early 90s, and somehow her cousin comes to bring over his, apparently to me, his copy of Slapshot. So I'm like, yeah, you know, if you wouldn't mind leaving that here, I'll watch it, because I haven't watched that in a long time. I've never seen the uncut version at that time, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So I don't see him for another couple weeks because I'm just dating the person at the time, and it's her cousin. And come to find out, he had rented it from Blockbuster, and then he's like contacting her saying, hey, I need that movie back. I'm going to get a whole bunch of fees. So eventually we like returned it to him with a $20 bill. I never watched it. I don't, you know, because I had a job and everything. And I ended up marrying the girl, and he's the guy, he's the lawyer who wrote our will. So,
wow.
And on Facebook, his moniker on Facebook is Reg Dunlop. So he's a huge fan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That is a full circle story. It kind of, you know, it's like you throw it out there and it comes all the way back around, and it's nice and cozy that way.
Yeah. It just makes me remember those Blockbuster fines they used to always hit you with when you're,
yeah.
I think they made more money off those than they did on.
And they had like a 10 o'clock return time or something like that. And you'd see cars lining up to the Dropbox at that time.
Yeah.
And we had it for a little bit like with Redbox, but then that was only like a dollar if you left it for an extra day. So who cares? And they had those places anywhere. But the kids nowadays are never going to get to have that thrill of, you know, 9:52. We got to do, you know, we got to drive like Richard Petty down to the Blockbuster to return the movie in time.
I don't know what's better, doing it that way with a red box or doing it with, you know, pay-per-view on TV or whatever. But to me, it's just easier just to rent it right from your TV.
Yeah. I like it better streaming now. Yeah.
Right.
Because you don't get charged with the Be Kind rewind when you forgot to rewind. Remember that?
They used to have standalone rewind machines.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah,
I had one of those, yeah.
Shaped like a race car or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right next to your, you know, Sports Illustrated football telephone and all the stuff that our kids will never get to see.
My mom and dad, when I bought them their first, what is it, a DVD player? What are they called again?
VCR? You
know, well, no, the play compact discs over your
TV. Yeah, it was a DVD, digital video disc or whatever.
she said to me, they rented their first movie, and she called me and she said, "Now, do we have to rewind this?"
Oh, wow.
"No, Mom, it's like a record. It's like playing a record, and you know." "Oh, okay. Well, then we'll go return it." True story.
So, yeah, talking about stuff that kids won't know today. What about this movie Slapshot? Do you think?
Well, no helmets. You know, they're all not. Or a lot of them aren't wearing helmets.
Yeah, only the defenseman wore a helmet that I can remember. And they had those awesome. The goalies had those awesome Jason the Friday the 13th masks that they back in the 70s that they had.
Yeah.
This is 1977, so there's conceivably still, you know, personalities in the movie that are still, like, Bruce Boudreau was in that movie. I don't know if you guys knew that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he plays for a few minutes of the movie. He plays number 7, and he's on the Hyannis Port team. And I think he's a defenseman or whatever, but he's in the movie for a couple minutes. And of course, Jack Carlson, that played for the North Stars, he's in it. He's one of the brothers, I think.
One of the Hansons, absolutely.
Yeah,
there's two Carlsons play. It's Steve Carlson and Jeff Carlson play the Hansons, and then I think the other Carlson was supposed to play the third brother, and he got called up to the
NHL. I think he had to go to the playoffs or something.
Yeah, so then they added David Hansen, and I can't tell him any different from the Carlsons.
Well, Jack was a fighter. He's a fighter with that, and he had a big, huge schnoz, which kind of acted like a sail when he was coming down the ice. But I remember that he and Secord used to get into it all the time. And Jack was a fighter, man. I loved him on the team.
Yeah, and I gave you guys if everybody checks out our Facebook page, I'm going to put those pictures of them in real life just to prove the fact. I think real life is stranger than fiction. I don't know if you guys saw that picture I sent you, but they look stranger in real life, I think, than they do in the movie.
Well, yeah, they got Hollywood makeup for the movie. They just were their regular old, you know, Iron Range Minnesotans in real life.
And those big glasses they wore. And, you know, that's still, like, I just moved away from the Iron Range like 3 years ago, and I lived up there for 12 years. And I got to tell you, what you see in the movies is pretty much what you still see on the range right now.
Yeah. And you know, that was a true story, that part where they got in the fight. When they're doing the skate around and they get in the fight and there's no refs to break up the fight. And then that was based on a true story where the Carlsons were the other team that was playing against them all put on those glasses, those Groucho Marx.
Oh, yeah.
That we always had back in the 70s, the whole team. So then they didn't start fighting before the game, but the Carlsons went in as the game was going to start and they go, "We're going to beat the hell out of these guys." And as soon as the opening whistle dropped, they started punching the other team in the fight. They said they couldn't break the fight up. Eventually, everybody just got so tired they couldn't throw any more punches. And that's what stopped.
That's great.
Yeah. So it was based on their glasses and their funny nose is what the whole fight was based on. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, here you have an example of a film made in the 70s. Directed by a huge director at the time, George Roy Hill, and starring guys like Strother Martin and Paul Newman and Michael Ontkean, so many of these Hollywood mainstays. So you had to know that it was going to be sort of a Rocky type movie, where it really wasn't. Rocky wasn't a boxing movie as much as it was a love story about a boxer. And I think that they stole a little bit of that for this movie as well, where, you know, Paul Newman, it's a love story that he just happens to have two loves. One is hockey and one is the woman.
Well, it's about relationships, and it's relationships between men and women. It's relationships between teammates and the city and their team. And so in the end, you're right. It's a relationship movie.
Yeah. I don't know what you think, Mike, but that's kind of what my
take. I think this was a little, I think Major League copied a lot from this movie, but I think Major League was based in Cleveland, and, you know, it was kind of a downtrodden city, so that was part of the joke. But I think this movie really had, like, the city, the steel mills were closing.
Yeah.
The team was folding. I thought this movie really captured the atmosphere of the city or the state it was in
a
little better than Major League did. even.
Sort of the whole blue collar culture type.
Well,
yep. It was almost like another character in the movie, the city, the blue collar. It was in
the rundown bars and the It's like Dan Cole always says on the radio, it's a terrible town with a terrible team, terrible fans, terrible arena. Everything about it is just terrible.
Yep. Yep.
Wow. And, what did he say that? Which city did he say that about?
He says that a lot. Usually about Detroit, though, because he's a big Detroit fan. I don't know how much you listened to Common when you were still in town.
Oh, yeah. I played golf with him once, actually.
Well, there you go.
He used to say that kind of stuff about Coach. That's a joke.
Yeah, people in Coach would agree.
I love Coach.
Our listeners in New Zealand love when we do this local.
They love the local color. So
color, they just love it. Yeah.
Population when we moved out of town, the population went down by like 9%.
Oh, did you live in Coach?
No, I did until 91.
I didn't know that. So I wasn't trying to be personal with that joke. It just felt right. But
well, it's like when I don't know how if we can name drop on here, but people would come out to my graduation party, and then one of my friends who lived in town was like, "Do you need directions back? You know, back into Eagan?" He's like, "No, I just follow the road."
That's great. So what did you guys think about the cast here? Like I was saying, Paul Newman and Strother Martin, and even people like Lindsay Krause is in the movie. You know, it goes on and on. There's all kinds of character actors.
Yeah.
And
Paul Newman was not too far out of the like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and the Sting. I think he even did the Sting with.
I think he was 51, 52 when he filmed this. From when I was doing the math,
and it reminded me of Gordie Howe. He played until
he played like in six decades.
Kids, yeah, because he was a guy that didn't wear a helmet, and you could see the silver hair just like on Paul Newman.
Yes,
definitely.
And you know, he used to say, "Well, I really wanted to play a couple of seasons with my kids," and so he did that. But you know, he didn't belong up. So, you know, in George Roy Hill, he had a lot of experience with guys like Robert Redford and Paul Newman from all those other movies that they did.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was such a great cast and the perfect director for it. But on the other hand, George Roy Hill directing a hockey movie,
Well, like you said earlier, it's not necessarily a hockey movie. Sure. It's a relationship movie with Paul Redford. So, of course, Paul Redford's not going to wear a helmet. You're not going to put a helmet on that, person. And then.
Or Robert Newman.
Right, exactly.
I don't know if you caught that, Mike. I don't know if you caught that.
Yeah.
You got it. Okay. They would have the typical argument scenes where Paul Newman would bust into the office of the manager and scream at him. And it was exactly what I pictured, like Norm Green's office and guys just kicking the door in and wanting to grab him by the neck.
And what do you guys think of Strother Martin? I forgot that he was that. What we have here is a failure to communicate. I forgot that's who he was.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. So you get what we had here last week, which is the way he wants it. Well, he gets it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
he was in Play on Loop.
Okay,
he's a kind of a character actor of the redneck sort of ilk, and when they needed that kind of thing, they would call him in. But it worked so well in this movie, just because he was kind of
weasel.
It was kind of an off cast type of thing for him. I forget what the term of that is, but.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know if you guys follow me, but
yeah, I was thinking the only other person that could maybe play that role would have been Ted Knight. Do you think he would have been all right?
Well, that would have been good. That would have been good.
Yeah,
Harvey Korman
would have been good.
Yeah, But
I don't know about. So I guess this movie didn't do great in the movie theater. So we kind of all caught it on when it was on television with all the cuts and all the swear words cut out and stuff. But my initial reaction was my mom broke into my bedroom and she said, "What are you laughing at?" I was laughing so hard the first time I saw it, when the Hansons took the ice for the first time. That the next day, this has only happened this one time in my life. The next day, I had sore ribs because I had.
Oh no, shit!
I had like bruised ribs.
I had that happen once. I saw Colin Mochrie and Brad Sherwood do part of their "Whose Line Is It Anyway" at the like the Orpheum Theater or something like that, and laugh so hard you couldn't breathe. Yeah.
There's been a couple movies that Get Shorty made me laugh like that.
We kind of compared this to Major League. I think Major League kind of had like the where the team is ending and they have to
yeah. win
the whole thing because they're ending anyways. Where do you guys think this ranks around with like comedy sports movies or just sports movies in general? I think it's my favorite team. I don't count boxing. I count that as something different, but I think this is my favorite team sport movie ever. What do you guys think?
Go ahead, Brian.
Okay, I would still go with Major League. That's because I was more of a baseball player growing up than a hockey player. And it came along at a time when I was playing a lot of ball and with people that were watching it as well. So then it's one of those things you can watch it in a group and it's even funnier because you get other people laughing. People laugh at things that you didn't see that were funny before and then it dawns on you that it's funny. It's like one of those movies to watch in a group of people. This is the same way. But mm-hmm. the fact that I was more of a baseball person than I would be more of the Major League. But this is certainly, you know, cult classic. And some people, I think it's been named one of the like top five guy movies of all time.
Oh, yeah. I would agree with that.
And it was written by a woman.
Yeah, exactly. I think she was watching like her brother play in the minors.
Yeah, oh, I didn't know that.
It's based on her brother's Yeah, his team was folding just like the team, and she went and visited him, and she just kind of wrote down everything she saw. And her name was Nancy Dowd. So, Jim, where do you rank this movie along sports movies?
Sports movies with, you know, top five, I would say. I'm trying to think of all the ones now that, you know, if you're going to say sports comedies, then, of course, this is going to be number one. But sports altogether, I like that movie Blue Chips, and I liked, you know, other movies as well as this one. Anyway, so, yeah, I would say probably top at least top three, maybe. Yeah.
That's on the Mount Rushmore of comedy sports movies for sure.
Okay, yeah. So do you guys consider Caddyshack to be a comedy sports movie?
Yeah, but it's not a team sport movie like you're saying.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, team sports.
Yeah, there have been a couple of football movies that have been okay, but nothing stands out like this one would.
So, yeah. Like, football's got, like, the longest yard.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. That's really good.
Right about that one.
Almost the same. That was about 5 years before Slapshot, too. So
yeah.
Period.
Yeah. That was Burt Reynolds, right?
Yep.
I think Ned Beatty's in it.
I forgot all about that movie.
I was gonna say with football, then there was like Necessary Roughness that had like Sinbad in it. And Kathy Ireland was his kicker. And
oh, jeez.
That had its moments. But that one, I think it's called Necessary Roughness.
Was Goldie Hawn in that movie?
100% don't know.
Yeah. I think I get more respect for you for not knowing because that movie was pretty rough.
Yeah. Well, she did give birth to like the sexiest person that I've ever seen. I mean, her daughter's hot.
Oh, you got a thing for Oliver Hudson?
Yeah, I was gonna say what's his name?
Yeah, I can't decide between Kate Hudson and Blake Lively. They're both like look like each other, and they're both gorgeous. All right, Mike.
Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, with sports comedies, I don't think Bull Durham I don't know if that holds up anymore. And I think Major League's better than that. And
comedies, definitely.
Yeah, for comedies, definitely. I mean, like, The Natural's a good movie if we're not comedy. For
right.
Not. Yes. Good one. What was the golf movie with Kevin Costner? Tin Cup. Great. Another great sports movie if you're not talking about team sport movies.
Yeah. You think it's easier to do a funny like non-team sport movie than it is a team sport movie? Because a team sport movie you're going to have so many more like side stories going on, kind of almost like Game of Thrones, where you got 100 different side stories. Whereas if it's a single sport movie, you got to kind of focus on the main person. There's just a couple auxiliary people, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, you've got, with a team sport movie like that, you've got to sort of have a background of the cohesion between all these people and, you know, relationships between all these people. And that takes away, I think, from, you know, making a real funny storyline with two or three people.
Yeah, like, otherwise you get a movie like The Waterboy, where I think they tried to, it's a team sport, but they really concentrated on Adam Sandler, and I don't think it was fully fleshed out as it could have been.
I agree.
Well, but that just goes into the pantheon of Adam Sandler movies. It's a known quantity. You know what you're going to get. There's Happy Gilmore. There's Waterboy. There was Billy Madison.
He had that hockey. What was his hockey movie? Oh, no, that was Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore, yeah.
Yeah, it was only half.
It's a hockey golf movie.
You know, by the way, in Slapshot, Paul Newman was a way better skater than I would have anticipated, because – you know, I was a decent skater, and he was a way better skater than I was. I
think he had a skater double for some stuff, but I'm not 100% certain on that.
I mean, you can watch a guy just skate 15 feet, and it's like watching a guy swing a baseball bat.
Well, he played when he was younger.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
He was a man of many skills, because he was a fantastic race car driver, too.
Yeah, that too. I just remember in Slapshot watching him skate either into a fracas or out of, and I thought, you know,
where they show him skating the most is when he's circling the net when he's accusing the goalie's wife of being a lesbian.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
He's circling the net, and that's the most you see him skate in the whole movie. Which, and I can't tell if it's a double because you mostly just see him come on his clothes.
Well, even the scenes, just the short snippets for a couple seconds at a time.
Yeah.
You know, when you see a kid pick up a baseball and throw it, you know if they're athletic and if they have the coordination to do that. Same with hockey. When you see a guy skate just 10, 15 feet, you know whether or not they're skating.
That was a Billy Crystal bit about, I think it was Pride of the Yankees with Lou Gehrig, and that they had like Jimmy Pearsall playing it, and he had no clue what a baseball was, and you could tell.
Well, did they? One of the Babe Ruth movies, they had him be right-handed because the actor couldn't hit left-handed. And other movies, they put the film backwards. He hit right-handed, and then he ran to third base, and they made it into first base, yeah.
It's like Matt Damon in that golf movie. And I'm thinking, man, you can't break 100 with that swing.
Well, have you guys have seen The Warriors, the 1970s movie, right?
No.
The gang movie?
No.
That's like my favorite movie. I was hoping we could cover it, but there's a street gang called the Baseball Furies, and they have their face painted up like Kiss, and then they wear New York Yankees outfits. But it's like you say, one of the guys swings, and their weapons are baseball bats, and he swings it, and he lifts his back foot up like kind of like a little girl would, and it just it takes you right out of the movie. You're like, oh my god!
When we taught
the Warriors, you got to know that's my favorite 70s movie ever. Maybe
when I was coaching softball with my daughter, and we would want them to open their hips up, we'd tell them to squish the bug with their back foot to help them open up the hips, and they'd lift their heel up off the ground to help that pivot. So,
I'm not going to be able to get that out of my mind. That's almost creepy to say. But anyway, I know exactly what you mean, because of, you know, coordination. When you watch somebody, you know right away
whether or not
they're coordinated. So.
Yeah. So I guess a lot of the actors in here you never heard from again, but they were mostly like from this hockey team that this movie was kind of based on. They were actual hockey players. And I mean, you could tell they all skated well. And I thought the movie did a pretty good, I thought it did a pretty good flow with the hockey. Like there wasn't too many men on the ice like you see in some movies where they keep passing the same person over and over again.
Yeah.
Or
every single race car movie where they got to shift to go faster, and it's like, you're already in top gear. What are you doing?
Yeah, they keep shifting, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a scene like that in Top Gun where they're in that in the chase scene with him and on his motorcycle and her in the car, and she's like driving straight upwards towards the ocean, and it's just kind of like, that's kind of not the way geography works. She's driving like up a hill, and the ocean's in the distance. Anyway.
Well, it reminds me, did you ever see those Three Stooges when they'd play football and they'd be running and they'd run like past like 70 guys and you're like, how many guys are on the field? They'd run by one, they'd run by a group and then there'd be another group coming up and I'm like, what position do they have, like 18 linebackers? Or why do they have another 8 guys coming after them?
And it's like, so. And like they're tripping over their own shoelaces and shit like that. So
yeah. You can... And then the field's like 300 yards because they're running forever. Yeah. It's like,
yeah.
But I didn't see too much in this movie. I thought they did pretty good with the hockey action.
Even the character actors, like you were saying, like Killer Carlson and all those people, you know, they had pretty decent acting skills, I think. I mean, they all came across as you know, bit players or character actors, but they did well, I think, in this movie.
Well, and that is, you know, there's a lot of locker room scenes. And so obviously these players had been in locker rooms before. So then that comes natural to them. So they're not necessarily even acting in that part. They're just being hockey players.
Right, right. I think Jerry Hauser, total bit player. He was in a million movies. You'd instantly recognize him. But he was also on the ice and he also could skate pretty well. You guys recognize that name, Jerry Hauser?
Yeah, he played Killer Carlson. He kind of looked like a little bit like Steve Guttenberg a little bit, don't you guys?
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know if you guys had known him or not.
Yeah, but and I guess Paul Newman said he didn't swear before that movie, and then he said he got kind of addicted to swearing after he shot his left. Because he had to swear so much in that movie.
Yeah.
And I like that how the older players, like when he starts goading the guys into being more violent, how they're kind of, I really like the movie wasn't over the top. Like the old players were kind of looking at each other like, what's going on? And you know, they weren't buying into it 100%. I thought that was pretty realistic.
Oh yeah. There was the one scene, if I remember correctly, where they're like, hit him with the stick or something else. And someone else is like, yeah, hit him, check him real hard. And then one of the older players is like, bleed on him.
I remember that.
And my favorite, yeah, is when Killer Carlson, when he gets in his first fight, when he's going to change his name to Killer Carlson, and then he comes in and like, and then the Hanson brothers are like, yeah, Carlson's a killer, he's a killer, he's a killer, and then the older player goes, Carlson's a mess. He's just like, oh, he's just like, a mess.
How long ago did you watch it, Mike?
I just rewatched it again just so I could kind of lead you guys with questions.
Yeah. Stuff.
Yeah,
and I really liked the dialogue in the movie because it wasn't like over the top. Like when the Hanson brothers first come on the team bus and everybody meets them, the guy just goes, "They look terrible." The old, and it's not like, you know, he said something like something they would really say. It wasn't like, you know, in movies how they always talk like nobody talks in real life.
Yes, right.
Perfect phrase.
Well, my favorite part with the meeting the Hanson. So he's in the bus terminal, like waiting for him. I think.
Yeah,
and he's looking around. He can't see him. All of a sudden, you hear this commotion going on. And he goes down there, and they're like banging the Coke machine because they hit their cord or something like that. He's like, "Come on,
yeah,
guys,
it's like three brothers born in the hood."
Yeah. Pick up your luggage and come on with me. And they have like Molson cases and you know boxes and stuff like that. And my dad always got a kick out of that. And one time I asked him why. And one time when one of his brothers came home from the service, he had 4 older brothers. They all spent time in the service. And instead of a suitcase or luggage, he had like a Molson case. Jeez. And something else. And that's what his luggage was coming home from the service.
Wow. Classic. I had my big green duffel bag, which is pretty typical. But they made these guys, the brothers, they made them, you know, guys in their late teens or early 20s that acted like they were 6 years old when they were, you know, the three of them were together, you know, they were playing.
That was the famous line. That, you know, yeah, Paul Newman goes, they brought their effing toys because when they're, when there's a suitcase bust open, he's got a bunch of Tonka trucks fall out. Yeah.
That was one of my favorite parts too, because they wouldn't let him play. They thought they're these nobodies from the Iron League and they wouldn't let him get any playing time. They're playing with toys. They're a bunch of kids. And then finally they're like, hey, you know what? Why don't you go out there and show us what you can do? And they just have a killer shift and everything. And that's like, that's like coasting in the movie up to that point. You know, they're setting the scene, and then it's gas pedal down and we're going.
That's exactly right. And you know, those brothers, the Carlson brothers, were better skaters than I think they get a lot of credit for, as defensemen or whatever they were. But you could definitely tell that they wanted to downplay their skills before you saw them on the ice. And then you see them on the ice and it's like a door. I was just saying that they purposely made those brothers look immature and like, you know, 5-year-olds, so that when they got on the ice, the shock of how well they skated and played and beat people up would, you know, be funny. And it works.
Well, I think that's why one of the things why it's a favorite guy movie, because every guy's like, hey, just give me a chance. I'll show you what I can do. Yeah. And that's kind of what it was with them. Hey, they're just, everything's crap. Our season's going bad. No one's in the stands. And then it's like they let them have their chance and it changes everything around.
Yeah, well, they're so innocent too. It's like, you want me to go get them, coach? You want me to go, cut their Achilles heels? Or
yeah.
And yeah, they'll do the sign of the cross before they go out on the ice.
Yeah. They're just putting on the foil like it's no big, like they've done it a million times before.
Yeah, was there a lot of fighting in the Iron League? Oh, no, not really.
Yeah, he said, not really. And then the guy throws his car keys. I don't understand why you throw your car keys. Don't you eventually need those back? I mean, but he throws the car keys and breaks his glasses. And then Paul Newman's like, what did he hit you with? And he's like, an object. And he's like, what? And he's like, you know, an object.
That's right. They all go Ron Artest on it or Meta World Peace and go charging in the stands to start a fight, right?
Yeah, they can't see because his glasses are broken.
Oh, that's right. Is it this guy?
Yeah, and he punches the guy out and he goes, that's not him. He's over there. And he punches that guy out and he goes, wait, I think he's over there.
And eventually they punch the right guy out, but they think it's not the right guy and they keep on hitting people.
Yep, and then
don't the cops come to the locker room later?
Yeah, that's when Paul Newman, he plays both sides. He goes out and he's like, he sees the cops are there and he goes, I throw my hands up. I can't control these guys anymore because he wants the publicity of them getting arrested. And then he brings the handsome brother out and he's like, the guy threw a monkey wrench right at his glasses. Look at the and then eventually it's a tire iron. He says he threw a tire iron at his glasses.
Yeah. And then later they sort of pan across the players and he's got the glasses on with like a half a roll of tape holding them together.
Yeah.
Oh, and then someone yells out, you know, they'll give you a dime to make a phone call. And then the Hanson brother's like, oh, we should order a pizza or something.
Yeah. they're going to order a pizza, yeah.
He looks like Ernie from My Three Sons when he has that those glasses on. He's, you know, so innocent looking. And then he goes on the ice and just beats people up. That's great. Juxtaposition there.
One is there anything more 1970s than Paul Newman in that brown leather leisure suit?
Oh, I loved it. That was kick ass.
It's like about the only clothes he didn't own other than his like hockey sweater, because he's wearing it throughout the movie. It's fantastic.
Wasn't he driving around in like a tan or a gold Ford Granada or something like that?
I don't know if it was a Granada or a Chevy Chevelle, one of the two. I couldn't quite pick it up.
It was that 70s stuff. And to me, every time I think of the 70s, I think of like a gold, you know, big, long gold Ford Granada pulling into, you know, a parking lot and the tires splashing up the slush and snow. That just to me is what 70s brings back to mind. You know,
I think wood paneling, harvest orange, appliances and stuff like that, or that.
Yeah.
Well, that was definitely a divide. Yeah, that 80 election and the dividing line between the 70s and the 80s and everything.
It really was, and it was a really, sharply drawn dark line right there. That was a good observation, Brian, because that's what I really, you know, envision. When it turned into 1980, it was boom. It was the 80s.
Well, right, and then that's when we started getting the neon colors and breakdancing came in.
Shorter haircuts. And,
yeah.
So yep. Then you're getting your hair cut over the ear instead of three quarters of the way down.
Well, and then yeah, even smaller cars too. There weren't any more, you know, 24-foot long Chrysler, Imperials or anything like that. New Yorkers. So the second thing. So I watched it all the way through to the end. So there was the one fan lady. She was always the one that's most made up, her hair done. Kind of looked like Marty from Grease, right? She was always in a lot of different scenes. So I was watching the credits, and it was Swoosie Kurtz.
Yes,
it's like Swoosie Kurtz. So I remember, and this would have been when Todd Stussy was playing on the Vikings, so early 90s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Swoosie Kurtz at the time was in a show called Sisters on NBC. Back when we, you know, there was only like the networks and not much in cable for as far as series and no streaming. So she's on a show and it was, you know, in the popular culture at the time. And so we're watching a Vikings game and just a name drop, but we all like them, so it'll be okay. We're at Chris Moody's place and Vikings are playing and Todd Stussy gets called for one of his many, many, you know,
holding.
Side holding.
Number 73.
Yep. 73, right. And also, Mike Munson's like, you know, if he married Swoosie Kurtz, she'd be known as Swoosie Stussy. No one could speak for like 2 minutes.
Oh, man.
So that was Munson being Munson. I mean, he's the king of dropping a line like out of the nowhere.
And
line.
I haven't said anything funny since then, so that's pretty cool.
He peaked. That's a pretty high peak.
Yeah. Hey kids, it's time for a classic commercial break. Do you remember this one?
It certainly is a big bun.
It's a very big bun.
Big fluffy bun.
It's a very big fluffy bun.
Where's the beef?
Some hamburger places give you a lot less beef on a lot of bun.
Where's the beef?
At Wendy's, we serve a hamburger we modestly call the single. And Wendy's single has more beef than the Whopper or Big Mac. At Wendy's, you get more beef and less bun.
Hey, where's the beef?
I don't think there's anybody back there.
You want something better. You're Wendy's kind of people.
And there it is. That was the big rage in the, what was it, 1984?
I'm confused.
The funny thing, go ahead. So the funny thing is it was released January 10th of 1984. Now, starting that year was like the Apple 1984 Super Bowl ad, and when the Super Bowl ads really took off. So you can tell that Super Bowl ads weren't as big of a thing because they released it, you know, 3 weeks before the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's a good observation, actually. I didn't think of that.
Huh. And it's funny that that little commercial turned into what, I mean, I guess nowadays we'd call it a meme. It was just everywhere.
Shirts.
Yeah. It even bumper showed up
stickers,
in the
window decals, yeah. Bumper stickers, all that shit.
Yeah. So I had poked a little bit into this just to be more informed than I was about Slapshot. And so Wendy's sales from when that was released, that was like January 10th of 84. In 85, their sales increased by 31%.
Wow.
But then there was a little controversy. So obviously that ad took off and we all remember it like it was yesterday. I remember even the little, I don't think there's anyone back there because, you know, people used to go into fast food restaurants. And there'd be like no one at, there'd be one person at the counter, and then it's like it would be mysterious behind, you couldn't see where they're making the food, which is probably should be concerning to all of us.
You know, I think right in that sweet spot there from like 79 to 84 is where fast food in the United States absolutely exploded, because before that you had like, you know, the A&Ws or the, you know, like down here, they still have like Sonic where you drive up and the server comes out on a roller skates and puts a thing in your window and you eat in your car. But right in that time frame, like the late 70s to 84, so exactly what this show is trying to reach or talk about, fast food just exploded here.
Yeah, and drive-thrus, I think, restaurants didn't always have drive-thrus. They had to start renovating some of them or building them new. So you'd have to actually go inside to, you know, McDonald's or whatever.
And that's when fast food was really fast because they only had a few things on the menu.
Yes.
And now you go in there and it takes me a day and a half to read the menu, and I get anxiety because I can't remember what I like.
Right. And they had four channels, and it was like the regular small burger, the small cheeseburger, a bigger burger, and fries. And they just would slide down and they'd grab them on a tray and hand them to you. Absolutely. Or do you remember the Minnesota Zoo when it first opened and the Dairy Queen there, and it had this big revolving wheel that would have food on it. You'd sit there and wait and grab it and throw it on your...
I forgot about that, yeah.
I don't think I ever saw that.
Oh, it was something else, to be honest.
It was like a 20-foot or maybe bigger wheel, and you would just kind of... It would rotate all the time, and you just grabbed what you wanted, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember, talking about wheel, just be tangential for a second. Do you remember when Wheel of Fortune first started? And what, however much the person won solving the puzzle, they got to pick prizes from this beautiful studio and then take the rest.
Shopper's Showcase?
Yeah. I'll take the ceramic cheetah.
And
the rest you want on gift certificate or account, and they always took a gift certificate. And then they booted that whole thing, I think, in the second or third year.
Yeah, and they had to, if they had like $50 left, and there was a $40, like you said, ceramic cat.
It was a ceramic dog they always had for just people would just take it just to clean up. Yeah, just to use the rest of the card. Yeah.
But anyway, with
it's like turning in the tickets at Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, that too. I remember that. This particular ad was Joe Settlemyer was a guy that did some stuff for Leo Burnett, that advertising. And I think Leo Burnett's out of Chicago. But anyway, he found these two little ladies to do this commercial. And originally, she was supposed to say, "Hey, where is all the beef?"
Right. But she had
emphysema. She couldn't say the line. And so... She ad-libbed, and it worked. And so they just kept on using it.
I think it was better, too, because it's just terse and to the point.
And it turned into a catchphrase like that. And 100%. That, you know, if it would have stayed longer like that.
Yeah, so what I looked into, I had seen some of that same stuff. So she got paid $317.80 a day. That was union scale at the time for recording. But then in her SAG... So she was in like the SAG union, like Actors Union Guild, right?
Yep.
And
Screen Actors Guild.
She had a non-competitive agreement, so she couldn't do advertisements for anything that would be like direct competitors of Wendy's. Mm-hmm. Well, in 1985, she did one for the Campbell Soup Company for Prego spaghetti sauce, and where mm-hmm. she says something like, "Oh, I found it as far as I found the beef," mm-hmm. and Wendy's got pissed and basically ended her contract.
Mm-hmm.
And then for 5 years their sales tanked until they started doing commercials with Dave Thomas, you know, the founder. They did some funny commercials with him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, yeah, over that little bit of pettiness, they, you know, tanked their sales for like 5 years.
Yeah, that Clara Peller was the woman's name, the shorter of the women. And they actually threatened her. And the Campbell Soup Company with a tortious interference, a tort, which basically means that we're going to sue Campbell's because you are actively trying to get one of our people to advertise your company. That's interference, so tortious interference. And so they figured it out. And like you said, Wendy's canceled her and history. But that line, people still know what it means.
Well, yeah, and then I saw she passed away like in October 10th, I think it was, in 1987, so right when the Twins were making their run to the playoffs and World Series, to put it in perspective of how long ago that was.
God, that's a long time ago. She'd be like 130 years old now.
Yeah, exactly. she'd still be too young to run for president.
I was wondering why she still wasn't getting work. I couldn't remember why she wasn't getting work.
Yeah.
Oh, she was doing that pantyhose commercial before that, and I think that was
she was. She did a couple other commercials before they put her in the Wendy's one. I did see that too. She got her SAG card at like the age of 80.
Wow.
She was 83 or 84, roughly, when they did those. The Wendy's commercial.
Yeah. Right in there. Like you say, early 84 or right before the like the Super Bowl. Is that what you said? Preceding?
Super, yeah.
Well, do you remember all the politicians? Mondale said it to Gary exactly. And Reagan said it at one point. I remember that.
It was you know, they'd beat all these proposals of, well, I'm gonna stop all the forest fires in the West Coast without saying anything. I'm gonna stop COVID without saying anything. And it's like, you got all these proposals, but you know, where's the beef to it?
That Clara Peller, she was born in 1903.
Wow, that's
when she was born, yeah. Amazing.
Late bloomer.
Well, yeah.
Indeed.
You know, she's the fastest young rising advertising star.
Well, you know, I mean, they did the one in the boxing ring or something, didn't they? Do one in the boxing?
They did a few of them with that, and the one where she was like calling him when the owners of the What a Bun or whatever, Big Bun or whatever they were calling the competitors in the advertisement, like they're on their yacht.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of stuff. They did a whole series of them then.
And I remember it was like any sequel, I think each one just kind of got worse than the one before.
Just like any movie franchise.
They did get worse, but what they did do, I think, is they solidified the catchphrase, if nothing else.
Well, definitely. Do you think they filmed them all at once, or once it hit, they went back and did some more, because it's like, oh, we've caught lightning in a bottle here?
Well, I'm looking at some pictures, and it looks like she's definitely wearing a different wig in a couple of them.
She
had a Simon Cowell facelift there. So
you got her a new wig.
Exactly.
Wow.
You remember the joke that came with the where's the beef question? You remember the joke, the answer?
Go ahead. I'll let you do it.
It was where's the beef, and the answer was, go ahead.
I don't remember.
Oh, between Wendy's buns.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna say something about the hot and juicy and that whole thing.
I knew it was going in that direction, but I didn't know where.
It was going down in a hurry. Yep.
Okay, so that's enough of the classic commercial talk. We just got too much podcast again, Jim.
No, I think so. Too much good material.
And then, but I'm going to leave us with a special treat today. I'm going to leave us with a original song by Jim Borner. So, Jim, why don't you tell us a little about this song that we're going to hear on the way out?
Well, it's not an original song. It's a John Hiatt song. So I can't say it's an original. It's just I did a version of a John Hiatt song, and I liked it quite a bit. And so I did it, and I sent it out. And it's called Feels Like Rain. I'm sure some of you will recognize it. And it's just a cool song. So I recorded a version of it.
Okay. Original recording, right?
Yeah, in that sense, I guess, yeah, it is original.
All right, well, I'd like to say goodbye to everybody. Everybody be safe, and we'll have a new episode in a couple of weeks. And let's give this song a listen, all right?
All right.
Sticky heat, I feel you. Open up to me. Oh, yeah. Love comes out of nowhere, baby. Just like a hurricane. And it feels like a rain. Underneath the stars with your baby, right next to you. Wondering who you are, baby, and how do you do? How do you do? The clouds are rolling across the moonlight, baby, and the wind howls out your name. feels like a rain. Down the hatches, baby, leave your heart on your sleeve. Looks like we're in for stormy weather, ain't no reason to leave. No reason, babe, just lie here in my arms and let it wash away all your pain. Let it feel like a rain.